Hey.
Hello, guys.
Welcome back
to the Flick Chicks podcast.
I'm Jane.
And I'm Allison.
And how are you, Allison?
I'm full of all kinds of pent-up energy because I've been in that house for, what is it now, going on like 10 or 12 days.
Yes.
My only breaks to leave being Walmart, which is my least favorite place in the world. And the block, the neighborhood block that I walk when it's nice outside so that I can not feel so pent up. But I, you know what? I'm going to come out a really good cook.
Yeah. Yeah. That's all that matters. And we just discussed you're going to be investing in Just Dance.
Yeah. Because I need to exercise, I think. When I was in England. This feels a lot like when I was in England, because I just had nothing going on when I was in England. I had, like, no classes, I had no job, I literally had, like, 4 or 5 friends that I would see, like, every night, but other than that, it was, like, I didn't do anything. So, I would just, like, go to the gym all the time, but I can't go to the gym here, and also, I'm not paying for a gym. The gym at my campus was free. So,
yeah.
I bought 2015 Just Dance for the Xbox One. For $8 on Amazon, and my goal is to just perfect every song.
You're gonna be an expert.
I am. Only at 2015 Just Dance, though.
It's very niche.
Very
expertise.
Niche. How are you?
Oh, I'm good. I'm adjusting to online school.
Yeah.
Which is, I mean, it's fine. It's fine.
I'm lucky because my online schooling is pretty non-existent.
Yeah.
Like, a lot of the classes I had just could not be transferred to online, like, no possible way, so mm-hmm. they were like, haha, here's an A, goodbye! And then, my other classes, a lot of them were like, I did all the work on my own already, mm-hmm. because they were, like, independent study type classes, and then, I have a history course, but it was already online, so it hasn't changed at all.
Yep.
And basically, like, that's how my thing's been going. I've not had a problem at all adjusting, really.
Ugh, I'm jealous. I have to do a biology lab online. It's miserable. It's horrible, but the professor's really nice, so that's always nice.
Professors in this time should be making their classes extra easy.
Yes.
They should just not, like, my dad is a college professor, and he said that he's gonna be making his classes, like, way more easy than they would be, because it's just not, like, it's not fair. You didn't pay for an online class, but if you're horrible at online classes, you shouldn't have to fail the class because of this.
Exactly.
Also, at this point, like, by the time that schools were being shut down, if you're already failing, the odds of you getting a passing grade are not that high, because we were already over halfway.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, so what are we...
Oh my god.
Covering today.
This was actually requested by a long-time listener.
Our been podcast. With us since the beginning.
The beginning. His name is Huon, and he has requested a lot of movies. We haven't done them all, but this one he requested recently, and we were like, that's a really good idea. So, this movie is Candyman.
1992.
It's got some people in it.
It's got Tony Todd, which I'm actually not sure where he's from. Let me look. He's from Candyman. He's from also from Final Destination, which I tried to watch, but I got about 15 minutes in, and I was like, nope, I'm out.
sounds about right.
Virginia Madsen is in this, who, she was in other things that I don't know. She was in The Haunting in Connecticut.
Oh,
she was in Dune. That's, like, probably her number one thing in the 80s. Yeah.
And then Cassie Lemons, she was in The Silence of the Lambs. And
yes.
She's from St. Louis, Missouri.
Oh, nice.
And she directed Harriet.
Really?
Yeah.
That's so cool.
Which we think should have won Best Original Song, but hey.
Yeah, she played Bernadette.
Yeah.
She's an excellent character.
She is an excellent character. Too bad she gets killed.
Too bad.
Okay.
Spoiler alerts.
Well, yeah, by the way, welcome to the podcast. So, time for me to read the plot.
Yes.
Once again, this is from Wikipedia, as it always is. I will go, that doesn't sound like they should have added this.
And then we'll adjust.
Okay. So, Helen Lyle is a semiotics graduate student in Chicago who is researching urban legends. She hears a local story about the Candyman, who can be summoned by saying his name 5 times to a mirror, causing him to appear and kill the summoner. Very, like, Bloody Mary.
Yeah, it's very, and he has a hook.
So
it's, like, combining, like, two classic urban legends.
His weapon is a hook on the bloody stump of his right arm. Ella meets 2 cleaning ladies who claim that it was the Candyman who killed Ruthie Jean, a resident in the notorious Cabrini Green housing project. That's a real housing project. In Chicago.
Oh, really?
It was, until 2011, when it was demolished. But, from, like, 1942 to, like, 2011, it was, like, one of the largest havens for, like, gang and drug violence in Chicago.
Okay.
So that's real. That's a real place. Helen looks into the case and also learns of 25 other murders, like that of Ruthie Jean's. Skeptical of the legend, Helen and her friend Bernadette Walsh repeat the Candyman's name to Helen's bathroom mirror. Nothing happens. Helen learns more about the Candyman from Professor Philip Purcell. I keep wanting to say Purell. If that slips out, I'm sorry. According to Purcell, the Candyman was the son of a slave who became prosperous by mass-producing shoes during the Civil War. At an early age, he was accepted by white society. A well-known artist, he was sought after to paint portraits of wealthy landowners and their children. After falling in love with a white woman he was hired to paint, who has virginal beauty, as they say, multiple times.
Multiple times. It's very...
Virginal beauty.
Virginal beauty.
All right? The kind of beauty only a virgin can have.
You know, that kind of beauty?
That kind of beauty? You've seen it. We've all seen it. You can totally tell when a girl's a virgin just by looking at her virginal beauty. As could he. So, he ruins that virginal beauty by fathering a child with her. And the Candyman was set upon by a lynch mob hired by his lover's father. They cut off his right hand, and then smeared him with honey, stolen from a beehive, which attracted bees, which stung him to death. So you would just take that in for a second. He was killed by bees. A grown man.
Because they smeared him with honey.
You know, it seems like a lot of trouble to go see.
Seemed like there could have been an easier route.
You could have just killed him. You could have just, like, literally, you had, like, a saw that you sawed his hand off with. You probably could have done some serious damage with that. You all could have just beat the shit out of him. But I guess bees is also the way to go.
Bees?
Bees? The Cards Against Humanity card?
The Cards Against Humanity card?
His corpse was burned, and the ashes were scattered across the land on which Cabrini Green was later built. That part's not true. Cabrini Green is real, but that part isn't true. Helen decides to write a thesis on how the residents of Cabrini Green use the Candyman legend to cope with hardships. She and Bernadette enter the housing project and visit the scene of Ruthie Jean's murder. This is, for sure, the first time I was like, Helen is an idiot.
Oh my god, she just doesn't care.
You know, being a graduate student just doesn't give you permission to do whatever you want and go wherever you want to go.
Like, with no regard to ethics. No regard.
You know what? I want to do a thesis on is it 59? Why am I can't remember
right now? Area 51?
51. I was like, I can't remember the name of the place. Crap. I want to do a project on Area 51, so could you, I'm just going to go in.
I'm a graduate student.
I'm from the University of Illinois. I'm studying urban legends. It's totally fine. So I'm studying aliens, so just let me in. They're gonna be like, leave? And her friend is like, don't go there?
Yeah, what are you doing?
Literally.
Bernadette the whole time, I'm like, yes, girl.
Yes, girl. The whitest black woman in the movie. We'll talk about that. I have so much to say about
I'm
this
so
movie.
I'm so excited. Allison has so much background
for this movie specifically. Okay, so there they meet Anne Marie McCoy, her baby Anthony, and Jake, a young boy who tells Helen that a child was castrated by Candyman in a restroom. So this is a messed up story.
This is, again,
where I'm like, this movie crosses a line.
Yeah, and they...
So, essentially, so they meet this woman, right, Anne-Marie, who's basically like, why are you here? Go away!
Yeah, go away! We live here!
But then they talk to her, and she kind of, like,
calms down.
And she basically just tells them, like, this is dangerous, you shouldn't be here.
Yeah.
But they meet the little kid, right? And
Anthony.
Anthony. No, Anthony's the baby.
Oh.
But yes.
Oh, yes, the Jake. Little kid, Jake.
They meet Jake. He's, like, probably, like, 5 or 6. And she comes, basically, Helen comes back another time alone, because, you know, she's so smart. And she's gonna talk to Anne Marie, but she's not there.
Yeah.
So then she meets Jake, and basically, she asks Jake, and Jake tells her, like, yeah, Candyman's real, but I can't talk about him, because, like, he's gonna get me if I talk mm-hmm. about him. And she asks him to show her, like, where Candyman was killed, and he tells her, they go to this, like, bathroom on this, like,
she
park.
She has no regard for this child's life.
No, at all.
At all. She just doesn't care.
I know. And so they go to this, like, bathroom outside, like, in the projects, like, mm-hmm. it's, like, next to a park, like, a park bathroom. I have to drink.
This movie does cross a line, doesn't it?
It crosses a lot of lines. So then they go.
I'm just thinking about it.
She basically asks him, like, why is Candyman here, like, in this random bathroom? And he tells her that his friend told him that there was a kid, like, a mentally disabled kid, mm-hmm. was in the store with his mom, and he had to go to the bathroom, but his mom was, like, shopping,
mm-hmm.
and so she was like, well, go across the street to the park and use the bathroom.
Yeah.
I know. And so then he goes, and I guess while he's there, Candyman comes up from the toilet, and she was like, oh, did he kill him? And she was like, he was like, no, worse. And he castrated him.
Yeah.
The little boy. And then Jake, the 6-year-old, maybe, he could be like maybe 7 or 8.
Maybe.
But I'm thinking younger. He goes, better off dead. And I was like, you're 6.
What the fuck?
What do you know? So, yeah, so Helen decides to go into the restroom.
She's so stupid.
Take pics. The restroom is disgusting.
It's horrendous.
And she ends up, like, she opens all the stall doors. I'll just read this. Yeah, no. It's not in there. She opens all the stall doors, and on the, there's also, so in the, like, room that, they didn't really talk about.
It's like, the room looks like there's, like, what, it's suite for suite?
Yes, yeah, suite.
Suites for
suite. For the suite.
Yes, suites for the suite.
That's from Hamlet. so they go, it's like written on there in like
feces. I think that's what it
I
is.
I think it's what it is too. And she pushes over the door and there's bees in the toilet. Mm-hmm. And then she freaks out. But I want to take a step back because that sweets for the sweet thing is in the movie earlier.
Yeah. Whenever she's going through the medicine cabinet and they come out.
So there's something that they didn't mention in this that's kind of important. Sort of. So Helen lives in a building, which was built by the same person who built the Cabrini housing projects. Mm-hmm. But her side, they ended up being split. She used to basically be a part of that project, her house did. But it ended up being split, and her side became very gentrified, and their side was not.
Mm-hmm.
So she lives in essentially the same building as the Cabrini housing projects. And because of that, she figures out that the person who murdered Anne Marie's neighbor came through the wall
mm-hmm.
By basically smashing in her medicine cabinet.
Yeah,
because there's no wall between the medicine cabinets of each apartment. So she demonstrates like that you can get into another person's apartment through their medicine cabinet on her neighbor's, and then they do that to get into the abandoned apartment, which was where the neighbor's murderer lived.
Yes.
So if there's, like, 3 apartments, there's, like, Anne-Marie is, like, the first left, the middle is the murdered neighbor, and the right is the murderer.
It's kind of a complicated movie.
I still don't really get it. So she goes through the window, and the final right-most hand apartment, which is where the murderer lived, has now been converted into essentially, like, a shrine to Candyman by the people. Mm-hmm. So there's, like, tons of graffiti and murals and, like, candles and things all left to, like, Candyman.
Yeah.
Who they believe killed the neighbor. Of course, Helen just thinks it was a murderer.
Yeah.
Or a serial killer who, like, said he was Candyman to, like, get out of his crimes, basically.
Now tell me what sweets for the sweet is.
So that's a quote from Hamlet, and they never really, like, talk about it at all in the movie.
Yeah.
I think it's just supposed to be, like, it's not even, like, a big thing in Hamlet. It's not, like, an important line in Hamlet or anything.
Interesting.
I think they just, she says it whenever she's giving a funeral bouquet to Ophelia. So, it's like, it's like a death thing.
Yeah.
But they don't really ever bring that up in the movie.
It's like, sweet, candy.
Candy, man, for the sweet. So, but it's like, it's when Hamlet's mom brings a bouquet of flowers for Ophelia at the funeral, her funeral. So, that's where it's from, at least. So, while exploring the restroom, Helen is attacked by a gang leader who carries a hook and calls himself Candyman. Helen survives the assault and identifies her attacker to the police, who believe him to be responsible for all the killings. So, this kind of just furthers Helen's theory that Candyman's not real.
Mm-hmm.
So then she has an interaction with Jake, where he basically says, like, you promised you wouldn't tell anybody, like, he's gonna get me now.
Yeah.
And she says, like, look, Candyman isn't real.
He's not real.
Like, it's just something that people call themselves in order to scare you, like Dracula or Frankenstein. It's not real. And then Jake, he is literally the cutest character in this movie.
He's pretty adorable.
He literally has a cup of, like, coffee or water, something. He goes, not real. And then he takes a drink, like, shit, man. It's so cute.
He
has the cutest little nose. Which is why it's all the more disturbing that Helen just has no regard for his life.
None. He just does not care.
So later, in the parking garage, Helen is confronted by the real Candyman. He tells her that because she has discredited his legend, he must shed innocent blood to perpetuate it. Helen blacks out and wakes up in Anne-Marie's apartment covered in blood.
This is crazy.
Yeah. Anne-Marie, whose dog has been decapitated and her baby stolen, attacks Helen, who is then arrested by the police. So, this is something that's really kind of interesting. Because Candyman can, like, hypnotize people, I guess?
Yeah, he can, like, somehow, I guess, take over their body.
Body or something.
Because she has no recollection of what she did, but, you know, it looks like she murdered
it's very, like,
the dog, at least.
Very, like, 50s Dracula vibe.
Yeah.
Filming stuff.
Yeah.
Like, her eyes, like, she honestly gives me very 50s actress vibes.
Listen, I actually made a note about that.
Me too! Multiple times.
Yeah.
Her they do that thing, that lighting thing, where they do the soft light only on your eyes.
Yeah. She made me think of Marion Crane from, Psycho.
Psycho. Yes.
Like, her whole look.
Yes, very much. And, so yeah, she goes to jail because she looks like she killed her dog and attacked her.
And stole her baby.
And she does have a meat cleaver in her hand.
Yeah, whenever the police bust open the door.
Not a great look. So Helen. Trevor, Helen's husband, and a professor of also urban legends, never met a college professor who can survive, they make a lot of money.
Yeah.
He's an urban legend professor, and she's a graduate student.
Listen, I'm about to be a graduate student, and no.
A graduate student in Chicago, and they make so much money.
And they're, like, investigating urban legends.
Yeah, it's like, come on. You don't make that much, buddy. Also, you only one of you works. But he bails her out of jail. The Candyman appears again and cuts Helen's neck, causing her to bleed and pass out. Bernadette shows up at Helen's apartment, by the way, with flowers to be like, sorry, you got arrested.
Sorry, you're the best friend, though.
So stupid. Where she is murdered by Candyman, who frames Helen for the crime. She has a knife in her hand.
Yeah.
Helen is sedated and then put into a psychiatric hospital.
And they keep her on Thorazine for, like a month. A month, yeah.
Yeah.
And she just comes out of it.
So after a month in the hospital, you're like, when they tell her it's a month, you're like, a month!
A month!
A month! What? That was days! Helen is interviewed by a psychiatrist in preparation for her upcoming trial. She basically has to prove that she's competent enough to stand trial.
Yeah.
Which she is not. But hey. So she attempts to prove her innocence by summoning the Candyman. The Candyman appears and kills the psychiatrist, allowing Helen to escape. Once home, she finds her husband living with one of his students.
Oh my god, I was like, I knew this was gonna happen, but I was so mad when it happened.
A woman named Stacy. Yeah, she walks in.
She's the worst, and this
her house
is pink!
It was painted pink! Her house was beautiful! I was like, what kind of midlife crisis? Also, she's way prettier than that student.
Also, that student's a bad actress.
I know! I wrote that too!
Yes.
I literally wrote, hold on, I'll read my note. I literally wrote, Stacy is a bad actress. You get 2 minutes to show your chops, and this is what you do?
It's so bad.
She's literally, like, smiling. She's like, don't hurt me.
You can't tell, like, what she's feeling because her face is just contorted.
Her eyes say, like, crying, but her mouth says, like, laughing. It's not... I was like, Stacy. No, girl. Thank goodness you only have 3 minutes in this entire film. So, this doesn't go over well.
No, but
Helen flees to Cabrini Green, seeking to confront Candyman and rescue Anthony. Oh, yeah. So, Candyman stole Anthony and basically said if Helen sacrifices herself to him, that he'll release the baby, unharmed.
Yeah.
So, when she finds the Candyman, he tells her that surrendering to him will ensure the baby's safety. This is a very confusing thing to me. It's sexual, it's murdery.
It's very sexual.
I'm like, is he gonna fuck her? Is he gonna kill her?
Like, the whole time I was like, this is sexual. Is this sexual? And then it just kept going. I was like, no, this has to be sexual.
It has to be sexual. But at the same time, it's like, he's talking about murdering her.
Yeah.
So it's like, I'm not really sure what to do. Why isn't he just killing her? I never understand this. Why he doesn't kill her.
Yeah. It doesn't make any sense. But unless he just wants to have sex with her.
I think that's it. I think that is it. I think at the end of the day, that's all it boils down to. But he can't, he has to kill other people because he can't kill her, but she said his name. He kills, like, disbelievers.
Okay.
That's why he kills people who say his name, because they don't believe in him. And he lives through belief?
It's very confusing whether he's a ghost or he lives through belief.
He says he lives through the belief. Sort of. But also, apparently he was real, so that kind of makes him a ghost. I'm not really sure what happened. I can't tell if this is like an urban legend come to life, or if the urban legend came about because it's true.
Yeah,
that's what I can't figure out.
Unclear.
Okay. So, yeah. Offering Helen immortality.
Yeah. Yeah, he, like, starts to have sex with her, and then he's like...
He opens his coat, revealing a rib cage wreathed in bees. The bees pour out of his mouth as he kisses her, sending the bees down her throat.
It's so upsetting.
Yeah. The Candyman then vanishes with Anthony, and Helen discovers a mural of Candyman and his lover, Caroline Sullivan, who bears a striking resemblance to Helen. The mural, as well as a message left by Candyman, implies that Helen is a reincarnation of Sullivan. So this is what I think is supposed to be happening. Candyman is, whether he's a ghost or not, he only lives on because people believe in him.
Okay.
So his bit is that if you don't believe in him and you say his name 5 times in the mirror, he kills you because you don't believe in him. And he wants people to be afraid of him so that he can keep living. But Helen does it, but he doesn't kill her because she looks like his lover and he wants her to be immortal with him. But I think just killing her isn't enough. I think she has to, like, submit to being killed.
Okay.
Or something has to happen between them where she'll be immortal. Otherwise, I think she's just gonna be dead.
Do you want me to talk about this when we talk about the ending?
We're almost to the ending.
Okay. Okay.
The Candyman promises to release Anthony if Helen helps him to strike fear in the Cabrini Green residence. In a bid to feed his legend, the Candyman tries to immolate them in a bonfire, but he himself is destroyed in it. Helen saves Anthony, but she is burned severely and dies. The residents, including Anne-Marie and Jake, pay their respects at Helen's funeral, with Jake tossing Candyman's hook into her grave. Afterwards, grief-stricken and guilty, Trevor looks at his bathroom mirror and says Helen's name 5 times. Helen's vengeful spirit appears and kills Trevor with a hook, leaving his body to be found by Stacy. After the credits roll, in Candyman's former lair, a new mural of Helen with her hair ablaze is seen, implying that she has entered the local folklore.
See, that was what, do you think that that was always the end goal of her becoming, like, that
Candyman.
Candyman, yeah, basically.
I think so.
Okay. That was what he wanted the entire time?
I think so. Yeah, I think that, I'm not sure if he necessarily wanted her to enter the folklore. I do think that, because he says, like, you have to help me make them afraid, like, to become immortal or whatever, like, they'll tell stories about us or whatever. I think he wanted her to, like, submit to being evil with him so that people will be afraid of her so that she could enter the folklore and they could enter it together. That didn't happen.
Yeah.
Because she entered the folklore for being a person who killed Candyman.
Gotcha.
Like, I think she entered the folklore, but not with him.
Okay.
Because that's... they think that she killed Candyman. Evidence by Candyman 2 and 3, this did not happen. But... it's what they think.
I can't remember what I was thinking.
This movie is weird.
This movie is very, very
weird.
That's
the end. I have a lot of notes on this. Okay. So, for one, what are the rules of this movie?
What are the rules?
What are the rules? I can't tell. Because, truly, I feel like there's just so many, like, plot holes in this movie, and maybe they're not plot holes, but they're not well enough explained that I can put them together. And I've seen this movie like 4 times and read like multiple articles on it, and they all sort of say vaguely the same thing, but it still doesn't really, like, when I watch the movie with what's supposed to be happening in mind, I still don't get how we get to it.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Yeah. It's like he forces her to have the outcome of doing, like, of murdering people.
Yeah.
Without, like, she doesn't think she's murdering people, yeah, but she suffers the outcome anyway, yeah, so why not?
Exactly.
Murder.
I guess. But it doesn't, it's like he's trying to build her image.
Okay.
Or something. Like, he is doing all these things. The reason he's, like, torturing her is because he's trying to build up the fear about her before she submits to be killed, before she dies, and they can be immortal together.
Oh, because she lives on with the belief.
With the belief, yeah. Which is how he lives on.
Okay.
But, of course, what happens, it's not Helen, the serial killer, who lives on. It's Helen, the woman that got all burned up in the flames, that lives on.
Yeah.
Through the residents of Cabrini Green, once again. Who's painting all these murals? Who's painting all these Civil War murals? Who's doing these frescoes?
I wanna know.
You have some great talent. Why are you on the Cabrini Green Housing Projects painting murals of Candyman? I said as far as the interracial relationship in the Civil War, I think Holes did it better.
I agree. I was comparing Holes to our Patreon episode, Big Fat Liar, about how they're, like, pretty, both very, very excellent.
Yeah.
But no, I agree that compared to this movie, Holes handled it far better.
Holes handled it a lot better. I cared way more about Kissing Kate Barlow.
I still do.
Me too. I love Kissing Kate Barlow. Like, I don't know. Along other lines that are just like plot hole. How does this grown-ass woman fit through a medicine cabinet mirror?
Oh my gosh, I know.
Also,
it got
bigger.
It did.
It went from, like, mirror size to, like, door size.
Yes.
I saw it. Also, she first enters that apartment. It's like an apartment. And the last part, She, like, enters it, it's an apartment, and then she, like, goes around a corner, and it's, like, a whole freaking warehouse.
You're so right.
What is that? What's the layout of this apartment? Where are they? Like, okay. Also, this movie, I think it's trying to be, like, a social commentary on, like, how black people were mistreated and now try and take down, like, their oppressors. But it just kind of felt like a white saviorism horror film.
Yeah, it definitely did. That is 100% what my notes say as well.
Just like, for one, okay, this takes place in a real housing project with real gang problems. The two black people that are not in this project are her best friend and the cop.
Yes.
The cop does not give a shit about the housing project people, as he makes known when he talks about Jake.
Yes.
Bernadette is scared of all the black people in the housing project, as she makes known by her constant talking about it. The only person that's, like, not scared of the black people is Helen.
I have a note. It's another white saviorism thing. She has, like, very, very much so, like, African art on her walls. She's, like, very...
I didn't realize that.
She does. She does. It's very, very intense, and I was like, okay, Helen.
Also, of course, I'm not... Here's the thing. I'm not saying you can't have, like, a horror villain that's a black guy. I think that that's good. I think, like, if you're gonna have, like, a Freddy Krueger, why couldn't, like, a black person be Freddy Krueger?
Yeah.
But why does he have to be obsessed with a white woman? And...
That's a character trait.
That's a character trait.
that they make known in graffiti.
A lot. In some fresco Civil War murals. Like, and I said the only non-ghetto black woman is basically a white woman. Like... Any black person that's, like, I'm gonna put, like, quotes here, like, heavy quotes, civilized, is, like, basically just white with black skin. Like, they might as well just be white. Like, they don't have any cultural ties to the black community. Mm-hmm. They completely separate themselves from the black community. I also, there's a part where they're in the, this is, like, specifically stood out to me. When they're in the ghetto, and they're with Anne-Marie, and they're talking to her, and then it, like, flashes, and they're at dinner at this really nice restaurant. And I said, the class distinction would be funny, except it's so unaware that it's not. Like, it's kind of, like, funny, except it would be funny if Helen, like, kind of realized it, but it feels like when people go on mission trips to Africa.
It feels like that I Am Africa song from Book of Mormon.
Yes, it does. That's exactly what it feels like. It feels like when people go on, like, mission trips to Africa and they're like, I can't believe how many lives I've changed here. And then they just, like, go away forever and never come back. And you're like, you didn't do anything!
You didn't do anything!
You just went on a trip to make yourself feel better about yourself. And that's exactly what Helen does here. That's what it feels like. Helen actually has no regard for these people. She doesn't really care about them at all.
Very evident in the way she treats Anne-Marie and Jake.
But she... And the way she, like, talks about them.
And the way that every time that she, like, goes to their house, she's like, oh, can I, you know, like, let me feed your baby,
Yes!
And it's,
yes,
like,
I wrote
weird.
That, too! I wrote that. I wrote something, like, along the lines of, like, why is this woman literally... Oh, she's literally helping a mom with her baby that spit up. You don't know this woman at all. You're, like, going through her house to get her stuff.
Mm-mm. It's weird. It's Mm-mm. weird.
Yeah, it's very... I don't like it.
I don't like that either!
And, like, it's not, like... I don't know how to put it, because it's, like, Helen's not trying to be a bad person. It's just it's really tone-deaf. Because it doesn't feel genuine at all. It doesn't feel like Helen genuinely cares about these people. There is one part where she talks, because Anne-Marie says that, like, she was home whenever her neighbor was killed by Candyman, and mm-hmm. then she called the police, but the police didn't show up, because they don't respond, basically she was saying they don't respond to calls that come from Cabrini Green.
Yeah.
Because they don't care. And because of that, her neighbor was murdered. So Helen does say something along the lines of, like, oh, you know, I get beat up when she's in the bathroom. She says something along the lines of, like, a white woman gets beat up and they run everyone down, but a woman gets murdered and they don't even care. And I was like, all right. That's, like, the only time in the entire movie where she says something, like, significantly true. And she literally just, like, makes a note of it. And everyone's like, yep, you're right. And then they do nothing about it.
Yeah, exactly. She makes, like, this note of awareness.
But then, like, doesn't actually... But then she continues...
She doesn't follow up on it at all.
Yeah, but then she continues to live in, like, her incredibly nice apartment. Which... like, was literally built to be a part of the Cabrini.
They're the exact same.
The fact that she lives in what is essentially the same building as the Cabrini projects, but that was gentrified, is, like, the perfect metaphor for this movie. It's like, the perfect metaphor for Helen. Being like, I'm aware that I'm built off the backs of these people, but I'm gonna keep doing it.
She just takes advantage of them.
I know. And on the end of the day, like, you can just tell when she takes Jake down there.
I know,
Jake has to come in and see her head all bashed in. It's like, oh, so you ruined that little kid's life forever. Congratulations.
Yep.
And literally, she, like, literally preys on these people. Here's the thing, too. She preys on the fears of these people for her research. She, like, pushes their fear.
Mm-hmm.
To try and be, and so that she can write a paper and be like, haha, how stupid they are for believing in Candyman when it's really just murderers and gangs. And if they would just get realistic, they'd see that their problems aren't just some urban legend, that they could fix them. Like, that's basically what her paper's gonna
be. Yeah, definitely.
But then every time when Anne-Marie's like, you're just gonna write about how we're all drug users and gangs and stuff like that. And she's like, no. And it's like, yes, you are.
Yes, that's exactly what
you're
going
to write. That is what you're writing about. But like, I can't, this movie is like, it's trying to make Helen a good person?
Question mark?
Listen, here's why I think it definitely is trying to make Helen a good person. This is a white writer-director.
Oh my god.
Yeah. So, I'm excited to see what Jordan Peele does with this.
Me too.
I think Jordan Peele, for one, I don't think Helen's gonna be white. I think she's gonna be black. Which will just automatically make this movie a lot better.
That's true.
In my opinion. Also, I think what pizza?
It's what? She's from It Feels We Could Talk. Tiana Paris.
Oh,
I think that's
playing Helen.
I think.
Quite frankly, I think this movie will be really good redone by him. Because this movie feels like it has, like, it put in a lot of, like, Easter eggs and you're supposed to, like, piece together what's happening, but they're not, like, clear enough or, like, good enough Easter eggs that you can actually just, like, put it together, and instead it just makes this, like, sort of, like, 75% complete picture.
I agree. It's very confusing.
I even, like, looked up, like, Candyman Explained, and I still can't really find anything.
I think they're, they changed the names.
Ah, gotcha. Well, I'm excited to see it redone, because I think he'll do...
A better job. I agree.
I think if you're gonna do a social commentary on the black experience, your main character probably shouldn't be a white woman. My opinion.
That is the official Flick Chick's opinion on the matter.
Harriet was a white woman. Told from the perspective of a white woman. It's like, why? We don't need that. I don't want that at all. Okay, let me find my review for it. Oh, I do have a lot of trivia on this, actually.
Oh, yes.
It was actually filmed at Cabrini Green, the real life.
Oh, really?
Cabrini Green. Yeah, parts of it, not all of it, but most of it. But they did, the producers had to make a deal with the ruling gang members put several of them in the movie to ensure that cast and crew safety during filming. Although, even with this arrangement, a sniper put a bullet through the production van on the last day of filming, although no one was hurt.
Good.
Yep. The bees are real.
Yes, they were bred specifically for the movie.
Yeah, and they're only 12 hours old. So they look like mature bees, but their stingers don't do anything. And Tony Todd, the guy that played the Candyman, really let bees be in his mouth. He had to wear a dental dam to keep them out of his throat. He was stung 23 times during the creation of the Candyman trilogy, so the whole three movies.
Okay.
So only 23 times, it's not bad.
He's in every one?
Yep, he is in every one. Nobody else is, though, just him. And, but he was paid $1,000 each time he was stung, so he got an extra bonus every time he was stung. The woman that played Helen was actually allergic to bees, and they didn't believe her at first. They thought she was just saying that because she was, like, scared after she got the role.
Oh my god.
She had to go take, like, an allergy test to prove that she was really allergic to bees, and they just said, oh, paramedics on set. So she, all of the times that bees are on her, they're actually newborn bees, like, literally newborn bees, not the 12-hour-old bees, because they didn't want her to get stung, and, because bees, like, newborn bees, like, won't sting you, because their stingers won't do anything.
Gotcha.
Also, she said the scenes with the bees actually were shot really fast, but the hard part was you had to get them taken off of you, and they have a bee vacuum. It was a little bee vacuum that would vacuum up the bees so that it wouldn't hurt them. I know! She said that the bees were furry, and so it felt like there were a bunch of Q-tips on her. And then she said it would take, like, over 45 minutes to vacuum all the bees off her body. And they had to wear bee pheromones.
Oh.
So that
the bees would be attracted to them.
Yeah, and not want to sting them.
That's really good.
That's kind of cute. I was like,
can you imagine Barry B. Benson working on a film?
Yes, I can. He did. Also, I think you know this. So the Candyman killer is a real life killer.
Yeah, Dean Corll, a white man.
Yes.
And he basically was a murderer, serial killer, pedophile, mm-hmm. but he owned a candy factory, and he worked in the candy factory, and then he got fired and would sell candy out of the van across the street from school. So that's where that kind of whole myth comes from.
Yeah, he would lure kids using candy. And he actually had two teen accomplices who helped him. But
one is named Hank, I think it's Hank Williams Jr. I think it's Hank.
What?
I think it might be.
Hank Williams Jr.
Maybe.
Not the.
No, not the. Sorry. I haven't listened to this episode last podcast episode in a while. Elmer Wayne Henley Jr.
Oh my god.
That's his name.
And then there was another one, but Dean plotted to kill and rape one of them, and so they shot and killed him.
Mom, I killed Dean. Down in that warehouse he keeps. That's the actual 911 call. Nuh-uh. That's what he said.
Nuh-uh.
Yeah, he called his mom.
Aw, well, that's good. He needed to be stopped. Virginia Madsen, the woman that played Helen, was hypnotized and given a trigger phrase on set for her scenes with the Candyman. Madsen grew increasingly uncomfortable with this method and asked for it to be canceled.
Why?
I don't know.
Why is that necessary?
It's not. Clearly.
Ooh, that gives me, like,
ew vibes. Ew. I know.
I don't like that. That makes me uncomfy.
Sandra Bullock almost played this part.
Oh, wow.
And Eddie Murphy almost played Candyman.
Oh, wow.
But he was too short.
Yeah, I can see that.
So the person that composed this, his name's Philip Glass. You might know him.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, he's a really, really famous composer. Apparently, Philip Glass really hated this movie when it first came out because he thought it was going to be something completely different. It is based on a short story called The Forbidden by Clive Barker. And he thought it was going to be an artful version of that short story, but in his view ended up being a low-budget slasher film. But Glass later said that his view of it has softened over time. He said, it has become a classic, so I still make money off that score and get checks every year. So I guess he doesn't care. Also, the effects crew had a blacksmith make Candyman's hook, but when they went to pick it up, the blacksmith refused to sell it from them. Once he'd heard that Clive It was for a Clive Barker horror movie. The devout Christian blacksmith had misgivings about the project and refused to sell it to them. So they ended up not using a real life book.
Like, I didn't know this was Clive Barker.
Yeah. This is interesting and something that I think they were completely wrong on, but here we go. There was some controversy that the film was depicting racism and racial stereotypes. According to Rose, I had to go have a whole set of meetings with the NAACP because the producers were so worried, and what they said to me was, when they read the script, was, why are we even having this meeting? You know, this is just good fun. Their argument was, why shouldn't a black actor be a ghost? Why shouldn't a black actor play Freddy Krueger or Hannibal Lecter? If you're saying that they can't be, it's really perverse. This is a horror movie. And according to Virginia Madsen, I was and am now worried about how people will respond. I don't think Spike Lee will like this film. And what I have to say about that is, she's right. Spike Lee shouldn't like this film. Here's the thing. That's not why it's not fine. It's not because of Candyman being a black person. Candyman's not the problem.
It's tone deaf.
The problem is Helen. That's what's tone deaf. Yes. The problem is Helen and her friends. Candyman is fine. Holes did it.
One of her friends looks exactly like Ben Franklin.
Oh my god, yes. That her, it's like her advisor.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, he looks exactly like Ben Franklin.
He dies in the second one, apparently.
Oh wow.
I haven't seen the second one, but I watched some explanation videos and I saw him get killed. I was like, okay. So this is a review. What do you give this game?
I like 5, maybe.
Yeah, that's probably what I'd give it.
I didn't like hate every minute of watching it, but no. But while I was watching it, I was like, wouldn't have made that decision.
Wouldn't have made the decision to adapt this. Okay, so this is, a lot of the reviews for this are terrible. They don't like it. But they're also just like really short and not good. This one's interesting, and it took me on a weird roller coaster.
Okay.
This is 4 out of 10. Candyman is black for a reason. It teeters on the brink of trash at the beginning, but an hour in it gets really involving and quite frightening. Well written and well developed, it has a cracker of a premise that makes us care what happens to Virginia Madsen's character, which is why we must watch to the end. Virginia Madsen is very cute, albeit with big 90s hair. Good creepy music, though Philip Glass has clearly gone to the Nightmare on Elm Street school of the synthesizer soundtrack making. There's a very nice Hannibal-esque piano theme that I liked in particular. I love that piano theme.
Yeah, me too.
It insists on involving itself in a race war in Chicago, which tends to oversimplify. Right graffiti, gangs, slum district, starving babies, and police not caring about black people, but caring about white people. The fact that the original Candyman crime happened in the slum district where Virginia Madsen then spends some of the key scenes of the film, and then combined with this the fact that Candyman is African American, this on its own would not be significant. Combined with all of these other factors, it does seem to signify something. Candyman's grandiose uniform, his resonant voice and presence, and the choral/organ music all come together to create the impression of Candyman as a kind of preacher. This is eventually built into his dialogue. At one point, he refers to having to leave his congregation. The belief in Candyman is likened to the belief in Dracula and Frankenstein and urban myths like alligators in the sewers, but here, Candyman is also linked with cultist belief and religion. Do you believe in me? Candyman asked Virginia Madsen. Come with me and be immortal. I'm not quite sure what all of this signifies. Perhaps Candyman is wreaking the retribution of the African-American community who've been wronged by their white suppressors, but it seems an awfully like Candyman represents the malicious, out-of-control African-Americans and their need to be kept in check. This was not their intent. Their intent was for us to feel sorry for Candyman, in the tradition of Frankenstein and Jason from Friday the 13th, where the killer has been abused and tortured and made into what they are. The problem with this is that being abused by one set of people when you're young does not excuse sadistically gutting a bunch of other random people. This is why a horror movie is not usually suitable. This is why a horror movie is not usually a suitable disguise for social commentary, because the requirements for a horror plot interfere with the requirements for a social commentary. That's the end of the review.
interesting.
You know? I was like, yeah, I kind of agree with that.
Yeah.
But it kind of ends up being about how black people are bad.
Yeah. Not what I was trying to do, but it's...
Clearly not.
But...
kind of seems like it. So this week on Patreon, we're covering Big Fat Liar.
Paul Giamatti, Frankie Muniz, Amanda Bynes.
We're literally so excited.
Oh my god,
so,
it was so good.
It's so good. So hit up our Patreon if you want to listen to that. A dollar or more gets you access to that episode as well as the entire back catalog of all of our Patreon episodes.
Yep.
That's where we usually cover new movies. So if you want to hear more recent stuff, go hit that up.
Yeah.
And especially during quarantine, why not?
Definitely.
All right.
Bye.
Bye.